Sometimes the same piece of art, seen from a different angle, can open up in us truths that otherwise would remain hidden. The Christian scripture is strange, unique, remarkable, in that there are four different perspectives on the very same story. There's not just one certified version of the words and deeds of this Jesus. There are four, and they are distinct. They each point to particular aspects of the life that we believe to be both human and divine. Rarely, though, on a week-to-week, Sunday-to-Sunday basis, do we get to see these different interpretations lined up side by side, so to speak. What is the writer of John's Gospel showing us today that we didn't see from Mark last week? Well, one way in might be language, because our Gospel reading for this morning is yet another instance of our English translation obscuring what is present in the original Greek. For every time that we hear the word witness or testify or testimony, it all points back to some variant of the same word in Greek. And that word in Greek is martyr. In the context of the first century, it simply meant a witness, one who gave testimony, as in a trial. But it is not surprising that variants of this word appear several times in this morning's text, because there are 35 uses of that word family in all four of the Gospels. And of those 35, 33 are found in John. And it is no mistake that they are used in conjunction with this dramatic figure we have come to know as John the Baptist. Except this week. You see, in the Gospel, according to St. John the Evangelist, this wild man in the wilderness is never called John the Baptist, as in Matthew's Gospel. He's never called John the Baptizer, as in Mark's Gospel. Believe it or not, this gospel does not actually record John baptizing Jesus in the River Jordan. No, in this version of the good news, John is present to play a very different role, a very specific role. Hear the words Eugene Peterson uses in his paraphrase of the Bible, The Message, to describe the words witnessed or testify in regards to John's actions. There once was a man, his name John, sent by God to point out the way to the life light. He came to show everyone where to look, who to believe in. John was not himself the light. He was there to show the way to the light. So this week, friends, let's call him John the Witness. Leo Tolstoy once said that there were three identifiers to prophecy. First, it is entirely opposed to the general ideas of the people in the midst of whom it is uttered. Second, all who hear it feel its truth. And thirdly, above all, it urges people to realize what it foretells. This is part of what made the religious authorities in Jerusalem so incredibly nervous. That's why they sent the priests and the Levites to the wilderness to check out what was going on, because they realized that as Jeremiah once wore a field yoke around his neck to show the oppression that Israel was about to endure, John was witnessing, enacting a sign in the wilderness of what was to come. So the priests and the Levites, all those gathered, we are wondering what was to come. What was John pointing to? One of the first inklings we get in the gospel is at the beginning of our passage. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. And this gospel, John's only job is to be a sign pointing to Jesus, the eternal Word made flesh so that people might know that Jesus is true and real, that the Anointed One, the Christ, is one who stands among us. A sign. What kind of a sign? Well, last week in my sermon, I talked about a sign that we had seen in an Oxford restaurant window. It encouraged people to have their Christmas dinners there, and you may remember that the sign read, "Christmas is on the way. Book now to avoid disappointment." Now, a sign like this is pretty basic, relatively thin. It exists to attract your attention with the hope that you'll eat at Joe's or visit Wall Drug. The theological understanding or purpose of a sign is to stand between someone and what they should be seeing. As one scholar has said, it acts as an intermediary that comes between two things or two people. At times, these sorts of signs serve to focus our attention, though oftentimes these signs serve to divert or to pull our attention in directions that we are unable or unwilling to see on our own. It was a somewhat surreal experience living in Oxford, England these past 3 months. Because as the Occupy movement started to swell in New York and in Oakland, all over the United States, in London, Madrid, and in cities around the world, the city of Oxford remained quiet. Now, I suppose this shouldn't be too surprising. After all, Oxford has been known as a royalist city for centuries. But it was strange to keep up with the events and analysis of what was happening halfway across the world, 5 to 8 hours off via Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Now, as I followed along, I encountered elements within the Occupy movement that I disagree with. And it is still somewhat difficult to know what I agree with or not, simply because of the multiplicity of opinions, voices, and platforms. And discerning from afar, I often found the analysis shuttling between one of two poles. One which said everything about this is true and righteous, and another which said it was completely misguided and seditious. So repeatedly, over the past several months, I found myself engaging the words that we heard in our lesson from 1 Thessalonians. Do not despise words of prophets, but test everything. Hold fast to what is good. Abstain from every form of evil. Especially at this time, this cultural moment, I find these to be words of wisdom. For there are some things I find admirable but not essential in how this movement has organized itself. Some of the rhetoric ranges from warmed over to overheated. But one thing has remained with me from the start, tugging at the sleeve of my subconscious for attention. Given what we have seen in the prophetic tradition of Israel, and upon hearing afresh from John the Witness, there is something absolutely vital, that of life, that is being raised up by this movement, something, a truth, which we must pay attention to or ignore, I believe, at our collective peril. Last week I mentioned a campaign by a national Catholic social justice lobby entitled Mind the Gap, Mend the Gap. What the Occupy movement has been rightly and resolutely pointing towards is an unjust system that has allowed a growing chasm in this country between masses of poor and growing desperate and those who have been called the super rich, those whose obscene wealth and intention has insulated and isolated them from the real and present danger that exists for millions. Before I go any further, let me say this. I do not consider this to be a partisan issue. Both of the major political parties in this country have shown an alarming ability to largely abide with a dysfunctional and corrupt financial political system. The recent 60 Minutes piece about cross-aisle congressional stock market profiteering is but one absolutely glaring example. No, friends, this is a Christian issue. The Occupy movement may or may not, in the end, provide the strategy or tactics that we will engage in to close this gap. But their tent villages and remarkable koinonia, or one anothering community, that they have engendered have served as signs. Signs that point the way to where Christ resides in our midst, like few others have in decades. They are shining light upon the predatory practices that some in the financial world have been allowed to perpetrate and are exposing the diabolical effects of a destructive and unequal system. Now, I realize that this is an uncomfortable issue. It's uncomfortable for me. And for some, this is a divisive issue. But at its core, what I have heard and what I've seen from the Occupy movement is the same passion for justice and righteousness that burned in Isaiah and in Jeremiah, in Amos and in Jesus. They are giving witness to the one who stands among us, who we do not know. The sermon may seem out of place exactly 2 weeks before Christmas. But if we are to be seen by others as pointing the way to something more than the tinsel-thin beliefs of our common culture, then there is no better time. Some in this country feel that war has been declared on Christmas, whatever that means. But I tell you, that's not my concern. I learned long ago that you defend God like you defend a lion. You get out of its way. What I hear this morning is this question. What do you say about yourself? What do you say about yourself? In your words, through your deeds, how do you point the way to the Christ who stands among us? Friends, it has been said that without such signs, the people will not know Jesus even if he is standing in our midst. The Occupy movement has found a way to point to a righteous truth in our time. Many here in this community have been a part of that movement, and others are still searching for their faithful witness, their lived testimonial. But all of us must answer this challenge, how we are going to be a sign in this world. How we will show the way to the all-powerful, almighty, everlasting God who came into this world, who was really here among us, even as a vulnerable, helpless, mortal baby. And is present now, even as we know him not. This may indeed be our gift in this world, to be a visible, embodied sign of justice, righteousness, loving kindness. Okay, so I realize that this will be hard to find this gift at Costco. I know, I went looking last week. But that may just be because a sign like this cannot be bought, sold, or consumed. A sign like this can only be shown, seen, and shared.